From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We're finally here. We're in Vermont for the PDGA Professional Disc Golf World Championships. And this is a special edition of PDGA Radio right here from Smuggler's Notch in Vermont. I'm Steve Hill. And for the first time, actually right next to me is Sarah Lamerson. Woo-hoo. Sarah, I'm pretty excited to be here in Vermont. How about yourself?
This is my first time here, so I'm very excited.
Same here. It's stunning. The whole drive in from the airport is like monumentally green.
Yeah. I got a little car sick, but
oh, did you?
Yeah.
I had a really great Uber driver who was giving me some good background on the area.
Nice.
I also learned the quite obvious fact that Vermont really just means green mountains. And I felt a little bit unintelligent.
Wait, the word Vermont means green mountains?
Yeah.
I had no idea either.
Yeah, it's French, apparently.
Hmm.
So we both learned something today. And Sarah's got a little bit of a cold.
Yeah.
But we're going to power through it. We're here.
An opportune time to be sick.
We're here, and we are ready for Pro Worlds. It's going on from some things have already started. We had field events today. We're recording this Monday. You're probably listening to it on Tuesday. But we had field events today. There was mixed doubles yesterday. So we already have some world champions to congratulate.
Yeah.
Lisa Fakus and Matt Bell took down mixed doubles. A little bit of a second-round comeback for them. So congratulations to those two. Second world championship for Matt Bell after his what year did he win putting? 2015? 2016?
I think it was 2015. I want to say 2015.
Yeah. He's racking up the titles.
Yes.
And neither of our picks did well.
No.
But that's okay. Those things happen.
Kat and Austin Hanum had a good chance.
They did.
I think they were like three back after round one, and then they shot a.
Did you mention on air that you wanted to pick Matt and Lisa? Because I know you mentioned it off air for sure because of their putting
skills.
Because
of their putting.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was on air, but. I don't know. You just never know. Like, their putting may not come into play unless they're giving themselves
an
opportunity in the fairway. And Brewster Ridge is not an easy course, so I don't know.
Well, I'm looking forward to more of your insights on Brewster Ridge and Fox Run Meadows, the courses that everyone will be playing this week. We're going to look at a couple of the weekend results before that, just to kind of go through it. And really, we're I don't know. The flow is going to be a little bit different today. We're here on site. A lot of players are already here and out practicing stuff, but we don't have people like running in and out or anything like that. We're just going to kind of do our thing and give you as much information as possible to follow the event this week and go from there. So, Sarah, first off, we should congratulate Mr. and Mrs. Oakley.
Yes.
Eric and Tina got married out right before the Nantucket... it's just called the Nantucket Open, right?
Nantucket Open, yes.
Out before that this weekend, so congratulations to them. And then the Nantucket Disc Golf Open, very popular B-tier out there. Zach Melton ended up winning that one. Two rounds in one day, he took it down. Nice couple rounds for him, averaging right around 10.48 or so. And then on the women's side, it was Paige, right? Paige Pierce?
Yep, she won by 6 over... Other Paige.
Other Paige. All right, so now you're putting Paige Bierkes back to Other Paige status?
I mean, Little Paige. We'll call her Little Paige.
Little Paige. Well, yeah. Paige P and Paige B took first and second. Sarah Hokum took third at that one. So,
yeah.
Fun little warm-up. I don't know. Hard for me to read a ton into Nantucket as a predictor for Worlds or anything. It's out on an island. There's a lot of travel here and there.
Yeah. I heard it's a hard course, though.
It is a hard course, I'm sure.
It's like a par... I was talking to Paul Oman today, who played, and he said it was a par 68, really difficult wooded course.
Well,
but not a whole lot of elevation change.
Paige shot 8 down. What did Zach win? They fixed that, because when I first looked, it was, like, over par. He shot 25 under par.
Yeah.
Over two rounds.
Okay, so maybe it's not... It wasn't hard for them.
I'm just saying, I don't know if it's a huge predictor for Worlds. Like, we've got, you know... James Conrad, who won MVP, came in 10th. You had, a couple other people. Paige Pierce winning is a good thing, I think, for her in terms of gaining some confidence back after the last couple events. But, like, Sarah Hokum coming in 3rd, I'm not necessarily worried about her here at Smuggler's Notch.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, Paige Bjork is, too. I mean, she is still shooting over her rating, which has grown tremendously over the past year.
Yeah,
so.
She's playing really well.
Yeah, she is.
So, I don't know. Do you think that this... I don't know. I feel like we can cherry pick a little bit here. Like,
I wouldn't say it's it's going to be representative of how people play at Worlds. Because, so also, I think Paige was in the wedding.
So Paige Pierce?
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Paige Pierce, yeah. So I think there was some probably celebratory happenings Friday night.
Well, that's pretty good, then.
And she played pretty well. And, like, Madison, I think, was in the wedding. Zoe was there.
Well, Tina came in eighth. How did Eric do?
Eric.
He came in fifth. Not
Eric
bad.
Came in fifth, yeah.
Tied for fifth.
Not too bad.
I'm just saying, I don't think that we can pull too much from Nantucket into looking at Worlds this week. It's a nice event.
Yeah, one day.
Now, what about something like Greater Hartford Open, which was the other, I believe, the A tier going on this weekend?
Yeah, that was the other
leading into Worlds.
The other kind of warm up that people went to before this event. I think it was just a one. No, it was a.
Well, that's a 3-day.
It was a 3-day event.
One round a day. Matt Orme took that one down with a 31 under par finish.
Yeah.
Shot 1026, 1073, and 1043. Really nice. Cam Kohlglaser. I mean, both of those guys I could potentially see in the mix at Worlds, especially Cam Kohlglaser.
He
just shows up to these big events and kind of wows everyone sometimes.
Yeah. We got Philo, 5th, James Cole, 6th. There's a lot of good name, big names on
FPO
here.
FPO field not quite as substantial at this point.
Yeah,
one,
it was just two women. Ellen Woodboom took it down. What is that? Math. 23 strokes.
Yeah.
She shot pretty well.
Over her rating, two rounds. Yeah. Not so much the final round. But
yeah.
Again, fun events for the weekend, but I don't know that I'm really looking at any of these events and thinking, oh man, this person played well there, so they're going to roll that into Worlds. I was looking more at MVP and that. But at the same time, I think if you're someone who was maybe struggling a little bit at MVP and you went and got over the hump at one of these events, maybe it's good for the mental game.
I mean, yeah, it's never bad for your confidence to win an event right before going into Worlds.
Now, speaking of confidence, Chris Dickerson's probably going to bring a lot into this event.
Oh, yeah.
He played at the Secret City Classic. And where was this? This was in Tennessee.
Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Yep.
And, I mean, he shot... What was the first? So it was a 27-hole layout, and he shot 24 under par in the first round?
Yep, and then 19 the second round. So 1062, 1029. And those sound like low ratings, but that I think is only because there's only two people over 1,000 at
right.
this event. Only 13 open.
Not a very deep field. Only 13 players in the open division, two in the open women's division. But 24 under par on a 27-hole, I mean, that's...
Bananas.
Yeah. And he's done that a ton this year. He's won, I mean, how many tournaments has Chris Dickerson won this year? It's got to be close to 20. I mean, he plays a ton. Won a ton.
Oh, my gosh. He's played a lot of events. 33 events so far.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only thing that we haven't seen out of Chris Dickerson really is one of those elite wins. Does that do? Can we just go ahead and say he's going to win Worlds after winning a big tournament like that? I don't feel quite as comfortable doing that, but... He's certainly playing well. 1062 in that opening round at this event is pretty solid.
Yeah. He's only actually played one NT this year, Glassblown Open, and he took 27th. So that course is pretty different than the courses that we're playing this week. But
Yeah. I mean, you could look more, though, at you know, Maple Hill and Ledgestone for more recent. I mean, we saw him come in second at Ledgestone. He was very close at that one. So we'll see. I think... It'll be interesting. There are a lot of contenders this week.
Yes.
And I think really that's kind of the biggest thing that I take when I look at Worlds this week is I see, at least on the MPO side, it's not just Paul and Ricky. It's not even just Paul, Ricky, and Eagle McMahon. I think you have a potential 6-7 contenders. Probably before we go too deep into that, we should talk about who won out at field events today, Sarah.
Yes. Very exciting.
Yeah, the wind. So we had long drive, skill shot, putting, and mini.
Yep.
Wind was a bit of a factor. A lot of people were being very deliberate in taking their time and when they were going to throw.
Yeah.
Because there were headwinds and everything like that.
Yeah, I saw that video of Kevin Jones.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, when is he going to throw?
No,
the
right.
The whole video was just him waiting.
It was him waiting. It was
a little
slow
let
motion.
Down.
Well, I had a video of him throwing, but the lighting. The lighting wasn't very good, and so I didn't want to put that up there. But I'm bummed because that was the only video I got of him, and he ended up winning.
Yeah.
So 528 feet, 3 feet further than David Wiggins, world distance champion.
Yeah.
Drew Gibson with 519 came in third. And I mean, you even see guys like Double G and Seppo Paiu throwing 489. Like, kind of on the low side for them, and it was because of the wind. I think Paige Pierce won on the women's side at 393.
And that's surprising, too, that she didn't even get over 400.
So. Exactly.
I also heard it was a little bit uphill.
Slightly uphill, but mostly it was just the wind being a factor.
Do we know what disc any of these guys threw? Kevin Jones or Dave Wiggins?
No, I would imagine Kevin Jones. I know he throws for Prodiscus, but he was throwing...
Okay. So Paige threw a Ballista Pro.
Paige threw a Ballista Pro. I know I had heard people talking like Kevin was maybe throwing a Boss. I know he throws some different stuff with his Prodiscus sponsorship, but I'm not 100%. He may have been throwing the Prodiscus distance driver, which the name of it is escaping me off the top of my head. So it could have been that. I know David, for his distance championships, was like way back when, was throwing Bosses. I don't know what Drew was throwing or Double G. I should have checked. But they're, I would imagine they're Destroyers. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Either way, long drive's always fun to watch. Putting, James Conrad won it with 39 points, which apparently is the highest that anyone who was out at field events can remember.
What is it out of?
It's 40? Out of 54, 40, and you 54, get, like, okay. I think you get a potential of 6 points at each station is how it works. And he was just... He was crushing them from the start. He won by 10 over Thunder Schultz. And Thunder Schultz was actually the first card of the day. I was driving back to the resort today with Bill Newman, one of our PDGA marshals who was running the putting event. And he's like, oh, yeah, I saw that 29 come on the first card, and I thought that might have won.
Wow.
And then Conrad came out and was just killing it. James was in a good mood today, man. He's loose. Like, he was out there. He went from there to skill shot to long drive, and then he was, like, having some lemonade and some kettle corn. And, like, he was just relaxed. Like, I talked to him a little bit. And like, he seems like he's in a good mental state for going into this week.
That's good.
Yeah.
Do you think the wind affected the putting at all?
No, actually, Bill was saying over at putting that they could have used a little more wind because it was quite hot. So there was a big, I don't know what building... Like, it was a school or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
That was kind of blocking that area.
Real quick about it being hot.
It was hot.
It has been way hotter than I thought the past couple days.
Yes.
Like, I stepped off of the shuttle yesterday onto the courses, and I was like, man, this feels exactly like Nashville. It was so humid.
It's been very humid. I don't think it's supposed to be like that the whole week, but early in the week, I think, is what the forecast is calling for. There was some potential of thunderstorms today, and I think we're getting some, like, mountain humidity. We had some rain showers outside this evening.
Yeah.
The weather's going to be an interesting factor this week, because I don't think anyone comes up to Vermont expecting in September to be hot and humid.
It's gross out here.
It's a little gross.
It's just like Nashville.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Worlds in Georgia last year. Not nearly as oppressive. That was pretty bad with all the gnats and the sweatiness, but it's definitely going to be hot, and it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on this week.
Yeah.
Skill shot.
Contest on the women's side, yeah. So Zoe Andyke won with 15, followed by Courtney McCoy at 14 and Des Redding at 11. Oh, fair Lisa Fakus.
She did not win.
Man.
I know.
I totally would have put – well, I think one of us picked her for putting.
Did we pick for putting? I thought we just picked for mixed dubs.
I think we picked for putting and distance.
Did we?
I don't know.
I think we did.
It's been a long week.
It has been a long week, and we just have got it started this week. Skill shot, we had, you know, it's basically a kind of setup in the field where people go and do different shots that are, you know, either like usually up shots, but they call for a certain thing. Like sometimes you have to be on E, certain things you have to be a forehand.
Overhand.
Yeah, just different types of shots, and James Conrad won that one as well. So man, couple world championships already for James Conrad this
racking
week.
It up, $55. Nice.
Yeah, the payouts aren't super huge, but I don't think that's why anyone's there necessarily.
I know, yeah.
And then Des Redding took the skill shot on the women's side. Madison Walker came in second, and Katka Bodova came in third.
Yeah.
She's out here from Slovakia. So.
I saw her yesterday during mixed doubles. Pretty cool.
Yeah, nice to see her out. So
yeah.
Are we missing any
mini golf?
That's right, mini golf. Anthony Barella crushed it. He shot a 43, which apparently was filmed by John, who runs Supreme Flight and is also Paul McBeth's caddy. So that's we're supposed to barely get some video footage of Anthony Barella shooting a 43 on mini golf.
That was a 10.55 rated round.
They actually give ratings for mini?
Apparently. I think it's just automated in the on the PDGA website.
But well, I love it.
That would be hilarious if it went into
we're staying right next door to Anthony this week, so I'll be sure to make sure he knows that he shot 10.55.
Yeah.
So he actually, and then he won the Putting World Championships last year. So
yeah,
he's just got racking putting up. And mini in his short career already.
Yeah, and then Steve Rico took second and Matt Dollar third.
Very nice.
So, yeah.
So that was field events, and then we've got the main event coming up this week. But Sarah, I think what we should do is we should take a break real quick, and then we'll come back and we'll get into all the nitty gritty. We will cover the courses, we'll cover how you can follow the event, everything like that, out here at Pro Worlds from Smuggler's Notch in Vermont. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, so the rain is coming down, and hopefully it's just going to get it all out of its system so that we can have a nice, smooth bit of weather at Pro Worlds this week. We did have that lightning thunder maelstrom last year, which was very exciting during the final round. But Sarah, Pro Worlds kicking off. You've already kind of gotten out to play the courses. What have you seen so far? Let's start first. I believe FPO is going to play Brewster Ridge the first day.
Yes.
So let's just start right there. What have you seen from Brewster Ridge? It's the same for men and women this week.
Gold tees.
How, get not 10 scale here, difficulty for the women. How is it?
I might go a 7.
Okay.
So one of the things that I noticed is most of the shots. So most of the shots off the tee, it's very, very wooded, but they're typically just straight for the women. For the men, like, I played with Kale and Paul Oman today, and they're trying to get to the basket.
Sure.
But a lot of the women are just trying to get off the tee and make their placement shot on these par fours, and so it's just a straight shot. Okay. And then later on, then you're trying to get, like, left or right to get to the basket, to get there for your four. But, yeah, it wasn't a whole lot of, like, having to maneuver around stuff off of the tee.
Okay.
So as long as you're smooth off the tee and can stay straight and out of the woods, because the woods are super rough, like not a lot of undergrowth but just tiny trees everywhere, so that's just something. I'm not sharing any secrets.
I'm sure all the women's players are going to tune into PDGA Radio this week to get all the tips.
I know, I'm just kidding. But that's something that I thought of. I was like, oh, I just need to throw straight off the tee and stay out of the trees.
I mean, that's kind of the vibe I got just from watching this tournament in the past, at least for Brewster Ridge. Is like you don't, if you can keep it straight, you're going to be safe.
Yeah.
If you try and do a lot and take risks, that's where you get in trouble. But I think that's what you want out of a wooded course.
Yeah. There wasn't just, I mean, I've played courses, just thinking about like Jackson at the IDGC that we played for Worlds last year. That course requires a lot of maneuvering off of the tee.
Yes.
So a lot of hyzer shots, anhyzers, whatever, flicks, all that. But this was just, I was like, oh, just take out my sidewinder or my turn. And just throw it straight 300 feet, and I'm perfectly set up for a birdie or a three.
I believe they've made Jackson more difficult this year.
I've heard that, yes.
It's going to be like almost 11,000 feet
or something like that. They changed, so they took out the Three Sisters, those short little three holes in the middle.
Turkey Gulch is what I always heard that one called. Yeah. Basically the three holes that
I love.
That you love?
Yeah, I typically play those pretty well. But I'll be there for the NT as well. So
enjoy that one.
I like it.
Yeah, no, that's variety. Yeah,
like a little bit of a breath of fresh air in the middle of the course after you've thrown just like bombs in the woods.
Right. All right, and so basically, how it's working is the men and women are flip flopping every day. So women will start day one at Brewster Ridge, and the men will start day one at Fox Run. Actually, I take that back. They're A, B, and C pools. Yeah. Right. So part The two men's pools are chopped in half by rating. So the B pool and the C pool, which is the women's pool, will be aligned, and they will play every day at the same courses until things are shuffled up. But so the top-rated men will be playing at Fox Run day one. Have you gotten out to play Fox Run yet and practice there?
I have. So I played that yesterday morning.
And it's kind of like everything that I hear is I haven't gotten to walk the courses yet, but everything that I've seen from past tournaments here and that everyone tells me is that these courses are kind of yin and yang to each other. They really complement each other well.
Yeah. Well, so back to Brewster Ridge real fast. So it's very, very wooded, but there's also OB to contend with on a few holes.
Okay.
And it's in the form of these, like, very jagged rock walls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the OB is staked. So it's got those white stakes, okay, like you'd see on a ball golf course.
Right, right, right.
And so there's a couple holes. Oh, there's also an island hole where you've got to throw about, I don't know, I want to say like 150 feet off the tee and land safely on this. The island is huge. You just basically need to get over like 150 feet and then get, okay, over to the island. And then it's like 250 feet to the basket. But if you don't get over the rock wall, then you have to go to the drop zone. And it's like today I got over the rock wall, hit a tree, and then it hit me back on the bad side.
Okay.
So it's still a little bit iffy. But there is in the woods some OB lines.
Okay.
On that,
okay,
rock wall. Yeah.
I think there's OB on only like 3 or 4 holes max though over Bruce.
Yeah, it's not
the
too
OB
bad.
Comes into play a lot more over at Fox Run.
So that's
more
what
open,
I was gonna say.
Right?
Yeah. So Fox Run is just like OB fest.
Okay.
The course would play very, very easy if the OB weren't there, because, okay, you'd be able to throw, it's very, very wide open, so you'd be able to throw all over the place,
okay,
and not really have to worry about where your shots are going left
so
or
they
right.
Tighten it up with the stakes. You've got it's an 8165 foot track for the women. The men will play an extended version coming at 9345.
Yeah,
I mean, did you notice, like, when you're out there, could you tell much of a disparity between the men's and women's tees? Was it just a matter of purely extra distance?
Yeah, there's a couple holes. I'm trying to think. So the 1,000 footer, I'm very thankful for the short tee, because you've got a clear, I believe it's the hole that you've got a clear, like an OB creek bed.
Okay.
And there's a bridge, and I wouldn't be able to clear it on my drive, most likely, if I were throwing from the gold tee.
Okay.
It's still kind of iffy from the blue tee even.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's definitely clearable, but it gets in your head a little bit.
Sure.
And then you've got, like, I think you have the pond right there, and there's a bridge. So there's a lot of different things, and there's rock wall right.
Okay.
And then once you get over that, then you still have like 800 feet, 700 feet all the way down to the basket, and it's just pure OBE on both sides. But it's a fair fairway. Like, okay, it's very wide.
Okay.
So you should be able to, and it's tree lined on the right-hand side and then wide open on the left-hand side.
Do you have, after your practice rounds, do you have a preference between the two courses? Is there one that you think you will score better at, or one that you think you'll enjoy better?
I like wooded golf. I play pretty well in the woods, as long as I can keep it smooth and slow and not get greedy.
Sure.
But I don't know. I only played one. I played 2 rounds at the wooded course and threw 1 round at Fox Run and then walked it the second time around.
Okay.
Because it's a beast.
Yeah.
Like, I went a little too hard yesterday. I played Fox Run in its entirety, through lots of different shots. And then I didn't play the mixed doubles. I'm kicking myself. It would have been a lot of fun, and I just didn't sign up. But during their lunch break, I had 45 minutes, and I basically ran the course at Brewster,
okay,
Ridge. And then I went back over and just walked Fox Run again.
Wow.
And you definitely see things that you might not when you're just walking it, and you're like, oh, this is a good landing spot. I should probably go here,
sure,
just to be safe. The Brewster Ridge does not have any mountain views.
Okay.
And Fox Run is just mountains surrounding you, and it's just beautiful. So just visually, I like Fox Run better. But I don't know. It's going to depend on the wind.
Right.
It's going to depend on, I think we've talked about this before, but I throw really understable discs. So sometimes that hurts me a little bit, because I try to overcome that by just putting it on a lot of hyzer. But if you're throwing it into a headwind, that's not always going to work out the best. So
right.
I need to put different discs in my bag for Fox Run for sure.
There you go.
That wasn't a good answer. I don't know. I you've come to learn that I'm very wishy-washy, and I like cannot
say that's okay.
one
that's
thing
okay.
over another very easily.
I don't think you're going to offend the courses, though, if you pick,
yeah,
one over the other.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'll have a different opinion after I've played them both.
I'm sure. We'll talk next week and see.
Yeah.
Yeah, interestingly enough, like, talking to, I feel bad. Like, I don't mean that I only talked to James Conrad today, but I talked to him a little bit. And, like, he said that, you know, obviously there's the general notion that he prefers wooded golf, but he said he really enjoys Fox Run too. So it's going to be interesting to see how these courses complement each other and how they play out and how that plays into scoring. Interesting thing I noticed the last couple years, you know, this event has previously been the Green Mountain Championship. It's been running for, I think, 4 years now. This event has yielded some significant scoring on the women's side. I think last year there were 3 rounds over 1,000. The year before that there were 2. And I think the year before that there was 1. The field wasn't quite as deep. But, I mean, we could potentially see some really hot scores on the women's side.
Yeah.
You're going to see some hot scoring on the men's side. We know that Ricky Wysocki has won 3 out of 4 times he's played here. Paul McBeth won the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship here the time that it was played. It wasn't sanctioned, but it was still an event here on this property. You know, and then you come in, and what I'm looking at this event is obviously we know that Eagle McMahon has, you know, set the world on fire this year. And I went back and looked at Eagle McMahon's finishes at this tournament, and I believe last year he came in 39th.
Yep.
And the year before that, 31st.
Okay.
And his average round rate, and granted, this is total small sample size theater here.
Can I say I'm very, very impressed because you're not looking at any stats right now. You're just pulling this out of your brain.
I did some research over the week and then started writing some things down. But I think the biggest reason these numbers stuck out to me is because they just seem so stark for what we know of Eagle McMahon. So 7 rounds total. At 7 rated rounds. I don't recall if he played that unsanctioned Pro Tour Championship round in 2016.
Okay.
But out of 7 rated rounds here over the last 2 years, do you want to guess what he has averaged?
Rating-wise?
Rating-wise. His average round rating for 7 rounds.
1023.
You're lower than most people I think would start at. 998.7.
What?
Yeah. I was floored by that number. I don't expect him to come anywhere near that this week, but
is on both courses? Just, huh? Yeah,
this is.
So which course was?
I don't recall. I think both courses. I think I'd have to look at the exact numbers, but I recall like in 2016, he had 18 OB strokes. 2017, he had 9. So a lot of that's going to be Fox Run because that's where most of the OB is.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting. I haven't gotten a chance to talk with Eagle a lot this week, so I don't really know where he's at, where his mindset's at. But I did talk to his dad earlier today, and he said, look, like he knows that he's struggled here in the past.
Yeah, he wants redemption.
Redemption, but I think there's also, there's probably like a comfort level where he's trying to like figure out how to get right at these courses.
Yeah.
So that's just like, that really kind of threw things on its head for me in terms of how to decide who's going to win this event, because it's like Eagle has shown us the whole year he has every skill that he needs to win here. He has the mental capacity, he has the physical stamina, he has forehand, backhand, putting, roller, whatever.
Yeah,
he can do it. But then you look and you're like, oh, but he's averaged below 1,000 here, and it's like, do you feel good about him, you know, flipping that switch this year? So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to watch this week.
Yeah.
Speaking of watching, Sarah, before we make our picks, media-wise this week, we've got Jomez Productions on MPO lead and FPO lead next day video. So round one, that will come in the form of feature cards. And then Central Coast Disc Golf will be on MPO second feature card and Chase the whole week. So all 5 rounds will be covered in post-production fashion. And then we are also going to have live coverage on Smashbox of rounds 3, 4, and 5, both MPO and FPO each day. And this isn't just the FPO gets filmed and then edited and then aired for an hour before MPO. We're talking the entire round, shot by shot, 3+4 hours, whatever, of live women's coverage. I'm fairly certain we're the only tournament that's done that this year. So I'm really pumped that we're able to do that. We're going to have Terry Miller is going to be working hard in the commentary booth. I hope he doesn't lose his voice. He's going to be paired up with Hannah Macbeth in the for the women's coverage.
Nice.
And then Robert McCall from Dynamic Discs will be on the men's coverage helping him out. They cool. always gel really well.
Yeah.
I just said gel really well, and they all also use a lot of that in their hair. So that's going to
yes,
work.
Yes, they do.
And then occasionally they're going to kick it to me on the sidelines. I'm going to do my best Pam Oliver and try and, you know, be insightful. So it's going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of coverage for people. The folks from UDisc Live are also here. They got into town yesterday. They're going to be here for all of our live scoring, every card of the whole tournament. So for all the people who are into stats, Sarah, you can check on your own stats.
Yes. Gotta so it's going to be full.
You got to get that circle one putting back to 100 again.
It's at like 96, I think, right now.
Yeah, there you go. It'll be as many cards as we can based on volunteers and everything, but
well, I'm
usually
lead card, so that won't be a problem.
There we go. UDisc guys usually when they're here they crush it and they get as much cover as they can, so yeah. We're pumped for that. We've got a bunch of photographers who are going to be here, you know, Alyssa Van Lannen, our usual NT photographer, Bob Carey from the North Carolina area, Corduroy, Chad Lefevre is here. So lots of photography, lots of video, everything you could think of, it's all going to be here. And we're doing it all this week. And we're also kind of relaunching our own PDGA YouTube channel. So for anyone who's listening, if you want to go subscribe to that, it's youtube.com/user/PDGA media. Make sure the media is on there. Because if you just go /PDGA, you will be subscribing to a random guy who only has one subscriber right now. So maybe you should subscribe to him and help him out a little bit.
Is he a disc golfer? Do we know? Does he have any content?
Not sure. No, he didn't have anything. I think maybe he's trying to get the PDGA to pay up. I'm not sure. We should go talk to him.
Yeah.
And again, apologies if Sarah and I both have croaky voices. We are not traveling well with our colds. But yeah. Anyway, without further ado, Sarah, the biggest thing we've got to do, we need to make our picks for the tournament. 5 rounds. Keep that in mind. Is this a cream rises to the top situation? Is it a, you know, yes, someone can get hot, but maybe, you know, someone can also come back. Anyway, what have you been thinking? You have first pick.
That's a good point, actually. So the cream rises to the top kind of thing.
Yeah.
These courses are, I meant to say that earlier, these courses are very fair. Like, so I was talking about Fox Run. It would be very easy if the OB wasn't in play.
Right.
But it's not unfair OB. Like, there aren't ridiculous mandos or
sure.
ridiculous island holes or anything like that. And then over on the Brewster Ridge side, it's not like some of these courses that that we play in the woods that are just little tiny trees all over the place, so you have to kind of pick your fairway.
There's fair fairways.
Yeah, completely fair. And I was also going to make a note about that. So the other very challenging part about that course is your stance. So a lot of times in the fairway, there's roots and wood chips and stuff all over. It's a very clean, pristine course, but there's a lot of big roots and a lot of uphill and downhill run-ups on these longer par fours. And when I was playing yesterday with a couple of the guys, they were making note of that. They're like, man, this would have been the perfect stance or perfect lie, but now I've got this like giant root. How do I mark it? That always kind of comes into play and is a challenge when you're doing that in the fairway.
Funny you mentioned that, because when I was talking to James Conrad yesterday, you know, I brought up the whole idea of most people obviously here would think that Brewster Ridge is going to be the course that you'll like because it's wooded.
Yeah.
He actually said he might prefer Fox Run because the tee pads over there, especially for him and his giddy up horsey
30
run up. I mean, the dude, his legs are like, I feel like I'm watching like one of those old videos of like Godzilla stomping over a city. Like, it's just so long. But no, basically, his run-up is really important, obviously. He said the tee pads he liked better at Fox Run because over at Brewster, there are some situations where maybe it's perched a little high, or there's, like you were saying, boulders or rocks in front of it, and he has to be a little more conscious of his run-up there. So it might not just be like he goes and slays it in the woods like normal. So yeah. I was really intrigued to hear that observation from him.
There's also a mixture of tee pads. There's so over on Fox Run, I think it's most if not all turf.
Yeah,
and they played really nicely.
I think they're fairly new, no lumps.
Whoever laid them down was very good at it. Over on the other side, there's a mixture of like concrete pavers which I liked. And then I think there was some turf over there too, but a lot of the tees were elevated just a little bit and they're kind of backed up into the woods because it's a very wooded course. So yeah, not as much of a runway for someone like James Conrad.
Well, now that you have stalled enough, you need to make your picks.
How'd you know?
Sarah gets first pick. She's been beating me this season, which means I need to go buy her a $45 gallon of, or $45 a gallon bottle of maple syrup.
It better be good. I can't taste anything right now, though, because I'm sick. So
yeah, I'm going to have to ship it to you, which is going to make it cost more.
Yeah.
So anyway,
okay,
you get first pick. Let's do it.
I'm going to go Wysocki. I think even though he's kind of had a roller coaster in the past month or so, I think he's going to get it together. I think he's got that fire.
Yeah.
And he'll be able to bring it all together this week.
He's played here traditionally well. Didn't win last year. A little bit of a redemption story there. Could be. I like it. And, you know, as much as I want to look at how many contenders we have this year, which there are a lot. Nate Sexton won recently. James Conrad won recently. Simon Lazat's always a threat. Eagle McMahon has been the man this year. My gut's telling me Paul McBeth for his fifth world championship this year. I think, you know, it's one thing to, like, see someone win it besides yourself for 1 year. 2 years, I would imagine that has just been grinding at him since last season. And you know, he can motivate just as well as anyone else. And I think what I like here, too, is that with it being five rounds, he's traditionally, he won all of his world championships when worlds were longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that whole, you know, the whole old adage of the cream rises to the top. But the other thing I like is that in more recent memory, McBeth has tended to dig himself a hole occasionally with a bad round. This gives him a longer time to come back, do one of those big crazy rounds if he needs to.
Yeah.
And he's played well here in the past when he's finished. So I like Paul McBeth to win world championship number 5. We shall see.
Very exciting.
I mean, it's going to be exciting no matter who wins. It's the world championship. I mean, realistically, I would love to see someone who hasn't won a world championship before. There have only been, I believe the statistic is only 17 in the open division, only 17 world championship winners in like the 36 years of the championship.
Wow.
I mean, Ken Climo did a lot of damage to that stat with his 12, but pretty amazing. So I wouldn't mind seeing someone completely new. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you think about the FPO side?
FPO side, same thing. I'm going to kind of stick to my original thought. Even though Paige has had kind of a roller coaster the past month, just like Ricky, she did have that really hot weekend in Nantucket shooting Nate down over, I think she shot like 11 over Hokum. So,
and these courses yield scoring for the women.
Yeah. She can do a lot of damage with her distance out at Fox Run. Of course, there's risk reward with all the OB, depending on what the wind is like, what the weather's like, things like that. But there's a lot of holes on that course where someone like me who can throw like 330 to 340 on a good day may lay up some shots, whereas she could just go for it and potentially park a hole. So she may get some advantage over at that course, especially. So I'm going Paige Pierce.
All right. I will caveat this with an apology if I'm repeating myself. Sarah and I did have to do a little bit of re-recording due to some technical difficulties. So I'm not sure if this was in the first half of the show, but if it's not, or if it is, you get to hear it a second time. Paige Pierce has only won her world championships in odd years. And I, you know, you can believe in that kind of stuff if you want. I'm a San Francisco Giants fan. We won 3 world championships in even years. It became a thing. So, I don't know. Maybe it's not Paige's year because it's an even year. Maybe she's the reverse giant. She's got to break the trend, basically.
Yeah.
But I didn't get a chance to pick Paige. I'm going to take a person who has won in an odd year, granted 2012. I'm going to take Sarah Hokum. She's been playing tremendously lately. I really think the mix of the courses here, she can, you know, do well in the woods. I think she knows how to play enough of a conservative game where I don't think the OB at Fox Run is really going to be an issue for her.
Yeah.
I think she'll go over there, she'll take her pars, get birdies where she can, try and score a little more at Brewster. And either way, it's going to be a great battle. They've both been playing really, really well lately, had some back and forth battles this season. So I anticipate it's going to be those in the top two.
Yeah.
Let's just stick on the FPO side since we're looking at it for top five. Who do you like?
Well, so looking at the list sorted by rating, Paige Bjerkus is not in the top five, but with her recent rounds, she's definitely going to get kicked to the top. She's probably going to, like, in the next rating update or the next two, she's probably going to be over nine, at least 950.
She's at least going to break past her dad.
Oh, yeah. So there was that this rating update? Yeah,
938. Yeah, they're both 938.
Yeah, I think she's going to be over 950. So she's going to be in that top contention for a lot of events coming up. So I'm going to go Little Paige.
Little Paige for top five. I like it.
Yeah.
I like that pick. What about you? She's been enjoying life on the road.
Yeah.
You know, part of me wants to say Lisa Fakus to get a second world championship this week on top of her doubles world championship. But Katrina Allen has won, I think, twice here at Smuggler's Notch. Granted, the fields weren't as large or competitive. But if I'm looking based on her history, she tends to elevate at these bigger events. She has struggled a bit in recent memory, but I'm going to go with Katrina to kind of get it back and get a top five finish.
I like it.
So then on the MPO side, we have two more picks to make. Sarah, who is your top five lock for the MPO side?
Well, Chris Dickerson is the fifth highest rated MPO, and he's also from Tennessee. And I've picked him a couple times this year and did pretty well, I think. So I'm going to stick with him. He's really good in the woods. And I think the OB is not going to give him any trouble.
I could see him potentially battling for top three. Like, yeah. Honestly, it would surprise me, but at the same time, it wouldn't. If he came out and somehow won this thing, like, he's... Just because we haven't, the only reason that I'm less inclined to think that is because we haven't seen him win one of these big, like, elite level events. But he wins. Like, yeah. You can't get around the fact that, like, regardless of the tournament, he's won a lot of them.
Yeah.
So if he can compartmentalize that into, hey, I've won wherever else, it doesn't matter that I'm here at Worlds, I can fully see him being a contender here.
For sure.
I really like that pick.
He also hasn't played... He's played a lot of A-tiers and Disc Golf Pro Tour events, but he hasn't played a lot of NTs this year, if any.
No, did he come to GBO?
Oh, GBO is the only one. Yeah. I actually saw his wife last weekend, or 2 weekends ago now, in Johnson City when I was playing that event. And word on the street is that they're going to get a house on the road.
Oh, nice.
And do some full-time touring.
I would love to see it. That would be cool. I think we'll be talking about him a lot more if that's the case.
Yeah.
Well, you left me with an easy top five pick. As much as I am a little concerned, because Eagle McMahon has not traditionally fared well at Smuggler's Notch, and he's like in trying to track him down a little bit this week, it's been a little tougher. And he even said, like, he's trying to lay low in terms of doing some media stuff and talking about it. And that tends to tell me that he knows that he's struggled here,
yeah,
and he's trying to work through that. And I respect that. He can, you know, he doesn't have to do meet. None of these players have to do media if they want to. It's their prerogative. So it makes me a little less inclined to put him right there with Paul and Ricky. But from a pure skills standpoint and what he's done this year and what we know he can do, top five easy, I think. So I'm going to take Eagle for top five. Will not surprise me to see if he can get over the hump, but I think it might take a couple rounds. We could be talking to a world champion Eagle McMahon next week. I don't think anyone would be surprised by that, but I know there is a lot of... I think Eagle's heard a lot of the chatter this year. He's won three NTs and a major. Like, that's automatically going to make people start talking about you winning Worlds, and that's a lot. He's still only 20. We still have to remember that his first big win was just in February.
Yeah.
And so...
There's a lot of pressure.
There's a lot of pressure on him, whether it's external or internal, I think is both.
Yeah.
And, you know, it won't surprise me if we're seeing, you know, maybe another year or two of Paul and Ricky before an Eagle World Championship, but, you know, we've been wrong before, Sarah, a lot.
You've been wrong a lot.
I've been wrong a lot more than you. I'd be happy to be wrong. I would be so pleased to see Eagle win this thing. Like, I don't know, at this event... And kind of at all the events, like, I I'm happy for anyone who's gonna win this. Like, I feel bad for people who don't win, but like, I'm more than happy to see Eagle win. I think there's good storylines for everyone. I know, because I'm like the journalist media guy, that maybe I look at some of those storyline things right more. But I mean, okay, yeah. Paul going for number 5, Ricky for going for third in a row, and you know, avenging his Smuggler's Notch loss. You've got Eagle and Simon, and literally I'm just looking down the ratings list. Eagle, Simon, Dickerson, you know, first-timers. Josh Anthon, old veteran. Nate Sexton, old veteran who has been playing really well and arguably took a while to get over time. I mean, we could do a storyline for almost every one of these players here. Michael Johansson, second place 2 times in a row here. So that's the fun part of this for me. No matter who wins, I think it's going to be a great week. We're going to have a great time. And I think that's where we should end this show, Sarah, because I think if we belabor it too long, we're gonna, you know, we just want to let people go have fun and enjoy Worlds. So yes. Again, thank you for listening this week to PDGA Radio. Again, keep an eye on udisclive.com, PDGA social media channels, Jomez Productions, Central Coast Disc Golf, Smashbox on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning and afternoon for FPO and MPO live coverage. Anything else you need will be at pdga.com. And Sarah, we will be back here. Well, I don't know what we're going to do next week. The show may be slightly delayed next week due to our travels. We'll figure that out. But either way, we will be talking new world champions next week, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Maybe it's going to be Sarah Lamberson.
It could be. Don't write me off.
I'm not writing you off. I thought about putting you in the top 5.
That would have to have an out-of-body experience, I think. Which I already am having because I'm sick. So.
There you go. It's a, like, Michael Jordan flu game.
Exactly.
You can go like that. So anyway, good luck this week, Sarah. Have fun. Everyone else who's listening, thank you for tuning in. That was PDGA Radio, and we will see you next week.